The Monroe Public Schools Board of Education meeting. Today is September 23rd, 2025, and the time is 7:01 PM. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Mr. Hunt.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sabadini.
Here.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin, as a reminder, if you wish to address the board during public commentary, please make sure you fill out the public commentary forms located on the table there as you entered the back door. Once you've filled them out, please turn them into our administrative assistant, Jamie. Superintendent Shaw, are there any additions or deletions to the agenda tonight?
There are none, sir.
Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
Motion to approve the agenda as presented.
Do we have support?
Support.
Any discussion? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini.
Yes.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Hunt.
Yes, and the motion passes. I will turn it over to Superintendent Shaw for his comments.
All right, because I know we're going to have it's going to be a long evening, and we have a wonderful conversation coming up in regards to our Arborwood campus. I have no question or comments for this first session.
Okay. Next is board discussion action items. As we have no reports this evening, we'll move into consent agenda. Are there any items the board members would like to have moved off the consent agenda and moved over to new business? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve items B2A as a consent agenda?
I'll move that agenda items in B2A be considered as a consent agenda and the consent agenda items be approved as recommended.
Support.
We have support. Any discussion? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini.
Yes.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Mr. Hunt.
Yes, and the motion passes. Before we move into new business, provide some background and context for our agenda items. All items on our agenda have either been discussed in depth at prior work sessions, which everyone is welcome to attend, or have been addressed in weekly board briefs. Although it seems we sometimes move quickly through these items, we have thoroughly discussed those either in the work session or in the weekly board briefs. And again, our work sessions are open to the public. I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw for the Board of Education meeting schedule change one.
Okay, so it is a request of the Board of Education to move to cancel the October 28th Board of Education meeting, which is meeting number 18.
Do we have a motion regarding the meeting schedule change one?
Motion to approve the cancellation of the October 28th, 2025 Board of Education meeting number 18.
Do we have support?
Support.
Discussion.
Yes, I have I wanted to have a little discussion on it. I feel like this is not best business practice, what we're doing. We should have people cross-trained to step in. Jamie does a fantastic job, but anything can happen to Jamie. We want her to enjoy her anniversary trip. Fantastic. But there are things that can happen. For example, if the president's not available, we have a vice president to take over. I know statutorily you only have to have one meeting. We set two meetings for October. And like I said, I really think we should consider cross-training as a good business practice.
Okay.
I support the two meetings a month. I think that we have a lot of agenda items. that have not been addressed. I think it allows us an opportunity to address those things that we haven't previously maybe had the time or whatnot. I know we talked about last night about where the meeting schedule is, and I think that we're doing a disservice to cut down those that are redoing. And I agree with what Brian's saying. The reason this is the meeting that's canceled because of you're being gone, I want to make sure I hit the right meeting. Is it this one?
Yes. So I will not be gone that day. It's the preparation that goes into it.
No, now, I just want to make sure I'm addressing the right meeting. That's
still,
all.
We're still going to have a work session that day.
Yes.
It's just the board meeting that won't. And as addressed to Brian, if I may, Jessica was cross-trained. We just had the turnover. I am in the process of training Bobby right now. So she's going to be attending meetings with me to train and go through the process.
Awesome.
That has not occurred yet, but we typically do have somebody cross-train.
Awesome.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I understand that staff turnover happens, but we're a big business here. And as part of a big business, a gap in one thing shouldn't stifle the actions of the board. And so I do not support removing this board work board meeting for the reasons I stated. And these were approved in January by this board.
Just to kind of expand on what Jamie said, we will still have a work session, and really our need right now are work sessions and discussing the items on our hit list for the work session. So that will still happen.
Yeah. But the work sessions are not recorded, and they're not in the way that a board meeting is. Anything that's discussed in a work session can be discussed in a board meeting as well. And so, a lot of times we say, well, we're only going to put motions in a board meeting, but the board does allow for discussion, and it does allow for robust discussion to happen at a board meeting. So I think if we're having one, we can have the other. And again, I do not support the removal of the board meeting.
So what was on the proposed agenda for the 28th that need that's so time sensitive has to be discussed on the 28th?
So if we would like to go down the list of items that have been requested to be reviewed by the board that have not made it on, I'd be happy to do that. But I just don't think this is the avenue and the place where we want to do that. Am I correct?
Well, those items are actually work session items. So still retain the work session, those will still be addressed on the 28th.
That's why I'm asking, what are the time-sensitive votes that would have to happen during a board meeting on the 28th? That's my question.
Well, the difference is we have went from viewing a board meeting as an open discussion and motion place to only being a place where we vote and make motions. And so there is discussion items that can be had at a board meeting. So it doesn't have to all happen in a work session. We can also do those at a board meeting for everybody to participate in. So again, I'm just stating where I stand. I'm just giving the reasons why I don't support this. And again, I have a list of things, but I just don't think right now is the time to go through that entire list.
So for me, having more meetings doesn't mean that we get more work done. And also, if we don't have something that's time sensitive that we have to act on the 28th, and it can wait to our next board meeting in November, I feel that we do have that work session on the 28th where we'll still be able to discuss and do a lot of the things that we need to do to learn about these important topics, to share our ideas, to share our perspectives, which is, in essence, a lot of what you've been alluding to is what is so important that we do at these board meetings. And true, these aren't recorded and live streamed, but they are recorded and they are time stamped, just like our minutes are for board meetings. So people are able to click into our agendas and then review our audio recordings and hear all of the discussion from our work sessions as well. So unless there's something that is urgently time sensitive that has to be voted on the 28th, I don't see the purpose of having a board meeting just to have a board meeting.
So again, if we would like to get into all of the discussion items that have been brought up to be discussed, because discussions can happen at a board meeting as well. And again, a board meeting is not just to vote. A board meeting is to have open discussions in front of the public about business that is happening that involves the board, involves the administration, and involves everybody that goes to Monroe Public School. So to say we don't have a vote, but we don't allow for discussion, to me, is a mute point.
That's not what I said. We can have discussion at board meetings, but what I'm saying is all of the discussion that we need to be having, we can still have that night because we still have the work session.
Brian?
I don't think this is productive at this point, so I'd like to call the question.
Okay.
I agree.
Very good. Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Sabadini.
This is the call of question, correct?
This is the call of question.
I'm calling the question right now.
Calling the vote.
I'm calling the question to call the vote. So you have to actually call the question, meaning we have to agree to call the question, to cut off discussion, and then we'll vote.
Okay. Thank you for the parliamentary.
Correct.
Okay.
As the parliamentary procedure.
Yeah.
Right. So,
do you understand, Jamie? We have to have a vote to cut off the discussion.
Okay.
That's what
Whether
this
we
vote
want
is.
To stop talking about it or not.
Yes.
All right. So,
Mr. Sabanini says yes.
Do we get a motion in support then?
We don't need that to call the question.
For a question, you don't.
No. All right. Mr. Sabadini, you said yes. Mrs. Taurasi?
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent?
Yes.
Mrs. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
Mrs. Myers?
Yes.
Mr. Hatton?
Yes. Okay.
Now we can vote.
We will have a vote on the motion.
It's already been supported.
Yeah, it's been supported.
We had a motion by Mary and support by Gary.
Yep.
Yes.
So now we'll go into Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
No.
Mr. Sabadini.
No.
Mr. Heck.
Yes. And the motion passes.
So our next item is the Tuesday of our November of Thanksgiving week right there is the request to cancel at November 25th board meeting and that work session. If need be, there would be a work session on that Monday the 24th.
I'll move to approve the cancellation of the November 25th board education work session and board meeting number 20.
Do we have support?
Support.
Discussion.
So for the same reason I just stated earlier, you cut down the work that the board is set here to do, and you take away the opportunity to operate as a board by reducing the meetings and the sessions for such that they are. It stifles the ability for the board to have those items that are important to people on this board and important to the people out there. So we're here to do a job.
When the board made the agenda or the calendar for the year, I noted in January when we made this calendar that I will not be at this meeting.
Right.
So I don't know who else that makes sense to, but I won't be here. Chaperoning.
Additional discussion? Hearing none. Jamie, can we have a roll call?
Yes, Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers?
No.
Mr. Sabadini?
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi?
Yes.
Mr. Hatt?
Yes. And the motion passes.
All right. So we have a reinstatement.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. And Mr. President, we ask the board to consider the recommendation of the reinstatement committee on this matter of student discipline and move to accept the recommendation of the committee for a conditional reinstatement of student A, or move to reject the recommendation of the committee and unconditionally reinstate student A, or move to reject the recommendation of the reinstatement committee and deny reinstatement of student A.
Do we have a motion regarding student A?
I move to accept the recommendation of the committee for conditional reinstatement of student A.
Do we have support?
Support.
Discussion?
Thank you for the board members that were on the panel, as well as all the other team that went into creating the packets and helping with context and information, because it's a long and very important process. So thank you for that work that you invested into that.
Thank you. Any other discussion? If not, Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mrs. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
Mrs. Myers?
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini?
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi?
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent?
Yes.
Mr. Hutt?
Yes, and the motion passes.
All right, second one.
All right. Mr. President, we ask the board to consider the recommendation of the reinstatement committee on this matter of student discipline and move to accept the recommendation of the committee for a conditional reinstatement of student B, or move to reject the recommendation of the committee and unconditionally reinstate student B, or move to reject the recommendation of the reinstatement committee and deny reinstatement of student B.
Do we have a motion regarding student B?
Move to accept the recommendation of the committee for a conditional reinstatement of student B.
Do we have support?
Support.
Discussion?
I just want to make note, I'm supporting the recommendation of the reinstatement committee because of this is their recommendation, but I actually, not even sure what the recommendation is except for that. So I'm supporting what they're putting forward.
Okay.
Just wish I knew more.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, just one thing about that. I don't know if that we can disclose anything publicly what the recommendation was. Can we, or am I wrong?
What was publicly put forward in the motion in public can be.
So it's not,
I don't know what that
conditional,
was.
So it's your conditional is there's a limiting amount of what you're
I don't even know what that means. Yeah. I don't know if they're coming back to school, they're going back to virtual, they're going to any, I don't know anything.
About what went on in that
didn't get any info.
Meeting.
Well, typically we don't.
You can use initials and tell what happened in the open part of the session.
Nothing in closed session can be brought forward. But if it was the motion is made in the public has, it's already in the public.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. You do have an attorney sitting right here if you'd like to ask him the question.
He's got plenty to do tonight, no question for that.
We didn't get any information on these, so we...
I think the summary that was just offered by a board member at the table is accurate. Anything that was stated in public in an open session of the committee meeting is fair game to disclose to the rest of the board at this point in time. Anything that was undertaken under a closed session at the request of the parent, which is given to the parent's option under the Open Meetings Act, must be kept in closed session, can't be disclosed in an open session.
Right.
Okay, so given that.
Yep, there's nothing going to be disclosed.
Okay, fair enough. Just wanted to make sure I understood the lawyer.
Well, could be.
I wasn't at the table, so I'm not.
Right.
Telling anything you the answer, that's the framework. Yeah. That's the model to decide.
Yeah. Okay, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini.
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Heck.
Yes, and the motion passes.
And we ask the board to consider the recommendation of the reinstatement committee on this matter of student discipline and move to accept the recommendation of the committee for a conditional reinstatement of student C, or move to reject the recommendation of the committee and unconditionally reinstate student C, or move to reject the recommendation of the reinstatement committee and deny reinstatement of student C.
Do we have a motion regarding student C?
I've moved to accept the recommendation of the committee for conditional reinstatement of student C.
Do we have support?
Support.
Discussion?
Same comment.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Myers?
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini?
Yes.
Mrs. Taurasi?
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent?
Yes.
Mrs. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
Mr. Hutt?
Yes, and the motion passes.
Okay, so now we're into the fun part of the night. As was requested, we said that through our open house process and a survey, we would gather the information in regards to the Arborwood buildings. So we have our K4 Arborwood North building and our 5-6 Arborwood South building, and what naming recommendations would be presented. Jamie, I do not have in front of me the number of surveys. Can you share what that was, please?
Give me one moment. Let me go ahead and pull that up.
We do have one document that has all the sixth graders recommendations.
Well, actually, you've got six leaders in both communities.
I like the reasoning.
All right. I apologize, my computer is just, there we go. Okay, so there were a total of 980 responses on the community survey. It was run from August 27th to September 10th. Of the different responses, 43.7 identified themselves as community member of 428. 31.5% identified primarily as a parent, which is 309. 21.6% were staff members, or 212. And 3.2% were students, or 31. And that was the community survey.
Yep. So that is a wonderful turnout of 980 responses. And so tonight, the Board of Education, you'll have an opportunity to discuss the names of those two buildings and maybe some options about how if you take a final final decision tonight or other options. So with that, I am going to turn it over to our board president to move forward.
Okay. Guess question for Parliament. Can we have a discussion without a motion on this?
Mm-hmm.
So let's, before we create a motion, because this is pretty wide open information for everybody.
There was not a motion listed on the agenda, so Technically it's more of a discussionary. If you guys so choose to make a motion after the discussion, you can choose to do that.
Yeah, you can make a motion.
Okay. Well, Brian, you want to start us off?
So we're talking strictly about the 5-6 building right now, right? Not Arborwood.
No, both buildings.
I know they're both, but we want to talk. Would you take them one at a time?
Let's take one at a time.
Okay, one at a time. Fair enough.
Okay. 5-6 first, right?
Yes, 5-6. These are priceless if you read through them. I do love the nostalgia of Cantrick. I also love the idea of not having Cantrick. I do like the 5-6 Detroit Lions, because we love the Detroit Lions. I do like the Eagles as well, someone apparently likes the Eagles. But looking at the sixth graders, I really looked at the student input more than the community members. I don't have a clear feeling one way or another. I mean, we obviously have a percentage. Did we get the percentage of what voted for what? Do we have that?
No, because with the community and the other survey, it was more they inputted what they wanted.
Gotcha.
It wasn't a choice.
I did the numbers on the community one. I did not do a numbers on the student one. It's kind of clear.
What's the number on the community one?
The community one, it was like, and I didn't count every single one, but I did the math of the pages.
Sure.
It was over 600 for Cantrick. And when I looked at the student one, I would say easy two-thirds of the student went with Cantrick as well.
Yeah,
so that's the kind of measure I'm looking at, two-thirds.
I guess if I were supporting the term Cantrick, I would prefer Cantrick 5-6, but that's just a personal preference. So.
Okay, interesting. Carrie?
Yeah, I looked through the votes and Cantrick overwhelmingly was noted on there many, many times. And for the history, Cantrick is the last name of a principal that was with Monroe Public Schools, and he died tragically in a car accident, and the school was named for him after that. That's where we're at.
And his name is on a plaque on what is now the middle school, the high school. Darla?
Yeah, I think I just shared the data that I saw. I mean, two-thirds were easily Cantrick. I know there was a conversation on what the specifics of it. And, you know, in the essence of trying not to change names all the time, you would hope that at some point maybe we would stick. But because there's a tendency of things to change maybe, what that school's going to be, making it a 5-6 building it may not be, you know, the way to do it, just Cantrick. We even talked about whether the word elementary needs to be on there. It's obviously an elementary school, but do we need Cantrick Elementary? Can it just be straight up Cantrick Trojans? Because there's a big, big, big push not to be, what were they, the Cantrick? Were they something
Blue
else?
Devils.
Blue Devils.
Yeah, so I think the big push on these was Cantrick Trojans, so.
Okay.
That's what my take was.
So you would favor Cantrig Trojans?
No, Cantrig. Just Cantrig. Just call it Cantrig. Just like Monroe Middle, Monroe High School, Cantrig. I think that's what everybody calls it anyways, Cantrig.
Gary?
To be honest, most community members have no idea which arborwood it is.
Right.
You know, it's...
Still call it Cantrig.
They still call it Cantrig, and they still call it Hollywood. And to be honest with you guys, sometimes I got to stop for a think. I say, okay, Toledo's that way. Okay, I know which one it is, you know. But that was my input, just for what it's worth.
Stacy?
I like the nostalgia of Cantrig. That's what it was when I went there. But after listening to Mrs. Lavender last night, and she was speaking about legacy, I kind of thought of something new of like legacy elementary or legacy intermediate, something like that. Because the kids were even buying into that. Like, this is their legacy.
Interesting.
That's my thought.
Mary?
So I really appreciate history and always like honoring those ties to the community. So I appreciate Cantrig in the name, but I also want to like add something that helps us look to the future. So maybe not replicating the exact name that it had, but adding something to the title that is a nod to how we're also forward looking. So we're paying homage to the past, but we're also looking to the future. So don't have a recommendation for that.
I looked at
clever.
Do you want to go?
No.
Yeah.
Wait for something really big here.
Sorry, I let you down.
Okay. So, Mr. Shaw and I had a little discussion earlier, and I think he had a good proposal. It sounds like having Cantrig in the name is what everybody kind of wants, but there may be a couple different flavors of that, whether it's just strictly Cantrig, whether it's Cantrig Upper Elementary, Cantrig 5-6. We could put out to the public, let's say, three versions of that, and then have the public come back and tell us which of those three that they want. So they get a little bit of extra input into it.
So we don't want to just go what they put on here, the majority? I mean, I thought that was the whole point of this.
It's part of a conversation. You get to make that decision.
We
could go that route.
Yeah.
Or we can put it to another vote with, say, the top three.
Right, because when I looked at MSTEPS, I noticed that Monroe 5-6 was listed as the school for over there. And I noticed some of the people in here, and it said stay Monroe 5-6, and so people think it's actually a name. It's being put out there as an actual name, which is odd because I didn't think we did that. So my concern, we're a Monroe 5-6, they think it is according to what they're saying here. So if we keep pushing this out, you know, I think that, you know, we hoping to do it sooner, but go with what they said and just do Cantrig. That's
well,
my thought.
So we wouldn't open it back up, we'd give them, say, three specific choices to pick one of the three.
But it still is going back to them for another vote, where they already voted.
Well,
three or four names that we would agree to.
We would agree to, yes.
Yeah.
But again, that's our choice, whether we do that or we just
let
go
them decide.
With a single.
And the reason why I, go ahead.
When, may I have a second? Just for the, on the Monroe 5-6, in order to get the location ID, in order to accurately report the students attending there this year, we did have to provide CEPI, which is a department within the state, of a name to use. So while everything was being determined of what the official name was, we did have to give the state a name. And what was provided to them is Monroe 5-6, because at that time, like, we can't just say...
Why can't you use Arborwood?
Because Arborwood is already Arborwood North.
Yeah, but you had Arborwood South. That's what its
name
was.
But Arborwood North and South were together in EEM, which is the Education Entity Master. So in order to...
Oh, you couldn't break them apart.
In order to break them apart, you have to have two separate facilities.
So we should have done this way earlier.
Well, I don't know, given the situation, that we could have.
Yeah.
It's going to
give the impression that we're changing. That's what they said in here. We're changing the name again.
And the name we can change with the state at any time.
Yes.
Mrs. Jones or myself are the authorized users that can go in, yeah. And there's only certain, there's certain fields we can change, there's certain fields that the state has to change. I just wanted to give that little bit of context.
No, thank you.
We did have to give the state a name.
Yeah.
And because that's how it was being discussed, was as Monroe 5-6, that's what Mr. Shaw and...
Yeah.
Mrs. Joseph.
I would just like the students to have ownership of their building right now. So we give them a name. The name was voted on. Cantrick won. I mean, people put, I think someone put Cantrick Wood or something on there.
Just two quick things is Laura would be with us tonight, Ms. Lavender. Unfortunately, her daughter had a car accident today.
Oh,
so that's why she's not here. But I will offer this. I'm speaking as though I was a fifth or a sixth grader today. Please do not call me an elementary student, because I'm not an elementary student.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so that's my one ask as a superintendent. Either call it Cantrick 5-6, Legacy 5-6, Intermediate, but not elementary, because our kids don't view themselves as elementary kids.
Okay. But they're categorized as elementary.
We used our processes of how we instruct, okay, like an elementary classroom. Okay.
Because that was clear when we made this.
We use our processes like we teach in our buildings the same way, not like we do at the middle school where they're changing classes. We have a team teaching program, so it is an elementary mindset. But for our 5-6 grade students, they don't want to be viewed as an elementary student. So calling them an elementary student is actually isn't what they want to be called right there. So. We can use the process of elementary, which helps us, we know, as we talked about months ago on certification, but calling it Cantrick 5-6, calling it Cantrick Intermediate, calling it Cantrick Upper, you know, even our upper L still gives that connotation yeah. there.
That's why I said just straight up Cantrick, the data said anyway. Mm-hmm. Just call it Cantrick.
Well, the nice thing is by putting either Intermediate or Upper or 5-6 in there, you're giving it that next level description, mm-hmm. kind of like...
But then when the building...
The river would have been fine for directions.
But then when the building changes, if the building would change again from a 5-6, we went through a lot of changes of schools. You know, that was, you know, that school's been through multiple changes.
Can I make a motion?
And the idea was to...
Can I make it quicker? We can make this... I'm going to make a motion that we rename the current Monroe 5-6 building to Cantrick.
I support.
Just Cantrick.
Just Cantrick.
I support.
Okay. Do we have further, now that we have a motion, do we have further discussion?
So there's not going to be any modifiers on it at all. Just Cantrick.
Cantrick. They're the Cantrick Trojans. They go to Cantrick. Their school is Cantrick.
I mean, if you don't like it, Mary, where you have the opportunity to vote at this point.
My gears are turning.
Well, you didn't give us one before,
yeah.
So.
That's all.
But that was one of the things I noticed on these, because in the comments, it was straight up Cantrick. It wasn't a lot of, hey, let's think of something adding on. There wasn't any of that. It was straight up, switch it back to Cantrick. It's what everybody calls it anyway, and let's just stick it there. So that's where I get that mindset from. It was what's portrayed in the data that we received.
Right, everybody calls Raisinville Elementary School Raisinville.
Right.
And I think if we did a similar survey, people would say, name it Raisinville. But I think the modifiers are helpful because I'm thinking of like a family that just moves into town. They've never lived in Michigan before. They're moving into Monroe. And they're just like, okay, I want to get the lay of the land. They pull up our district website and they're like, cool. Elementary school, Cantrick, 7-8, Monroe Middle School, Monroe High School, Orchard Center High School. And there's all these buildings that have these modifiers, and then there's Cantrick. And people go, what's a Cantrick?
Well, it's technically an elementary school, but we've already identified we don't want to call them elementary students.
Correct, but we can call it intermediate.
But that changes it from an elementary school... to an intermediate school, of which that was not the agreement when 5-6 building went in.
Why don't we take the vote on Cantrick?
Okay. Well, we can't. Yeah, we don't want to shut down
If it doesn't pass, then you're going to have the opportunity to recirculate this around. I mean, I'm just taking a reading of the room. I'm not sure Cantrick's going to pass, so we'll have another.
Well, we don't know that.
Okay. I won't call the question if you want to keep talking about it.
Personally, I like the qualifier. I think even calling it Cantrick Intermediate doesn't mean it's still not classified elementary school in the system. That doesn't change. It's really just the name on the building. And it does give the kids, I think, a little bit, you know, more pride that they're not an elementary student. They're something more.
Mm-hmm.
They're in that intermediate phase between elementary and the middle school.
That's funny because the sixth grade kids did not make that qualifier hardly ever.
No, that was my point. When you look at what they said, they didn't say, we want to not be elementary students. They didn't bring any of that up. They just said straight up Cantrick.
Be changed back to Cantrick.
Hold on.
The elementary survey was, so originally they were given a paper survey.
Okay.
We turned it into digital to make it easier for you guys.
Okay.
That be changed to Cantrick was a direct choice. They did not type that in.
Multiple choice?
Oh. Correct. It was multiple choice.
Oh, okay.
But if you look at the comments do not support them saying that they need it more than that. The comments are like, hey, my parents went to Cantrick, because what does everybody call that building? Cantrick. We've always called it Cantrick. I don't even know what qualifiers there was on Cantrick. Was it Cantrick Middle School? Was it Cantrick? I don't even know what it was.
It was Cantrick Junior High at one time.
Well, but I don't think
it probably went through multiple changes.
It was known as Cantrick for a long time.
Yeah. So I think that's where that comes from, is no one called it something else. They've always called it Cantrick.
It wasn't a 7th grade building in your time, Tom.
So when it switched from a 7-8, it switched to this, and it switched to an elementary, and it switched to this, and the word Cantrick would just stay, and you wouldn't have to worry about all of these qualifiers, because that building has changed multiple times. That's my take on it.
Any further discussion? If not, Jamie, can we have a roll call?
Yes.
So we're voting on whether...
The motion was Cantrick.
Just Cantrick.
And supported.
Making it clear.
Mr. Sabatini?
Yes.
Mrs. Tarassi?
No.
Mrs. Vincent?
No.
Mrs. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Heck?
No.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
Mrs. Myers?
Yes.
Is that 4-3?
Yes.
Okay, so the motion passes. We'll call that Cantrick.
On to Hollywood.
Okay, the next is...
which never made any sense.
Well, that's true. Arborwood North, which
I think people were confused on that because they called it Cantrick.
Cantrick too,
So I'm not sure what that was.
But Hollywood was still the number one.
Well, there's pages and pages of
Hollywood.
Like pages of Hollywood.
Or Hollywood Elementary.
Most of it's straight up Hollywood. There's one, two elementary.
Well, so on this building, because it is a K-4 building, please add elementary to it, okay? So I don't care what you pick. Please add the word elementary.
Okay. Do we want to start with the motion on this one? Maybe it'll be a little easier?
Sure. I move to name Arborwood North as Hollywood Elementary.
Do we have support? Okay. Discussion?
I think we've already mentioned that it's overwhelmingly Hollywood in the data we received. And that was staff members, community members, parents. The students didn't do anything on that because it was only sixth graders that voted in the other building.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mrs. Tarassi?
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent?
Yes.
Mrs. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
Mrs. Myers?
Yes.
Mr. Sabatini?
Yes.
And Mr. Heck?
Yes, and the motion passes. Okay. old business. Since we have no old business tonight, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw for his second comments.
Okay, so I just have a few. Tomorrow is our first half day, Wednesday, September 24th, and so communications have been put out to families about this being a half day of school. Rainbow Preschool will follow its normal schedule. Kids Club will also have extended hours tomorrow for pre-registered childcare. Sodexo Food Services will send packed lunches home with our students. It is also homecoming week, so lots of fun festivities out there. It is a full week. Powder Puff game tomorrow at 6, and then Friday, homecoming parade is at 5 o'clock, and then right after, out at the by the gymnasium, there's a big tailgate, so please come out and join the tailgate. We kick off at 7. Count day is next Wednesday, which is the first Wednesday of the month. Hopefully next Wednesday is not shut down the state of Michigan Day. So if you have an opportunity to reach out to any of our legislative people, do ask that they get a budget in place for us on or before October 1 would be appreciated. And then the last thing is, and this is to all of our parents out there, we will be sending a communication out in regards to Telegraph Road. I know the city has already been publishing a lot in regards to Telegraph being closed down beginning next Monday through, I think it was October 26th-ish. And so that will raise a lot of pain and agony for our transportation and for everybody. We saw that last Monday, 75 had an issue, and so trying to get south out of even down Macomb Street, got to the hospital, and it took me about 25 minutes to get to Custer. And so that traffic is getting rerouted onto Dixie and Monroe Street right here, so that is going to be much harder to get around the city area. So that will have an impact. And so the only thing that we're hopeful for is that the Stewart Road Railroad Crossing does open this Friday night, because if both of those things happen next Monday and 75 continues to do what 75 does, it will be and become a bottleneck for us. And so we'll be pushing communications out, especially. And so to our parents, if you catch any of this, please pop on your app and take a look at the traffic out there. And if you see 75 all red, you might want to make other plans for moving about inside our district. So that'll be about a 3-week run there. So we will push out that communication to support the city and helping our parents know how that will go. That's all I have for comments tonight.
Okay, thank you. Public commentary. Do we have any tonight, Carrie?
Yes, we have two.
I know you have a lot more, so I will be brief. First, when you were doing the reinstatements, I understand that apparently only a few board members attend those hearings. Is that true now?
Yeah, it's...
is there a committee or...?
Yeah, there's a committee, okay. If I can explain. Two board members, in this case it was Gary and I. There is an administrator, there's a teacher, there's a parent. Am I missing anybody?
David. And, well, that's or Terry.
The administrator, I guess I said.
Oh, okay.
There was a second administrator.
Yeah, was there?
Okay, so it is a committee that's preformed. You rotate.
There's also times that we make a motion and that some students need to come in front of the full board and not just the two board and administrative team. So that goes, but it can go either way.
Yeah, in this case, it was what I would call a normal reinstatement hearing.
All right. And I will say on the Kantrick School thing, I think it's a good idea to go back to plain old Kantrick School. It seems that building every 15 or 20 years has a reconfiguration, and just keep the same name, and then whatever happens, you don't have to play around with the name again. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Yvonne.
Okay, first I'd like to say thank you all for giving me the time to speak. I know this is a little unordinary. My daughter was expelled, and she has to follow the procedure for the reinstatement, and I completely understand that. We have been hitting some roadblocks trying to get her stuff. She did the community service. She's done all the stuff that she's supposed to do. I had all the reinstatement papers filled out, but we couldn't get the proof to go along with it. We've been going through some family hardships over the last couple years as well, on top of the expulsion with her. So we have most of the proof. So I guess what I'm asking is it absolutely like set in stone that she was only supposed to be expelled for a year. She's going on 4 that she's been out of school, okay? She's been doing virtual. She hasn't had no issues. She's got some recommendation letters. She has never got to attend a school dance. we were hoping to get a reinstatement hearing in time for homecoming, which that did not happen because where she did the community service, the lady still can't find the file with the proof. I don't know if you guys would have to require her to do all the community service over, or if you would be willing to take, when we fill it in, take pictures as proof of her community service. I don't know. I'm just really trying to get my daughter back in school. Her education is the utmost important. She's behind in credits. She struggles virtually a little bit because she's more, does better with, you know, in classrooms. So I guess I'm kind of just asking, like, is it, she did the counseling, she's done everything, we've got proof of most of it. Is that going to suffice in a board meet, in a reinstatement hearing, or is it like she's got to have solid proof of all of it? You know what I mean? I mean, is there any way she could be maybe given a pass to attend this last homecoming that she may ever get to attend?
We're gonna let him.
So, I know we did answer that first person's comments, but we typically don't. But I know that this young.
I'd be happy to speak with her outside.
Let's talk to you. There you go. So I would be willing
to chaperone it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, if necessary, just.
As soon as our board, as soon as you're done talking, okay.
I'm done. If you guys are willing to talk to me, I appreciate
then
it.
Then you're. He'll be talking with you.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. That's it? Okay. Board member commentary. Brian, if you want to.
For the parade, there is a parking dilemma. But downtown Monroe, we don't have a parking problem. We have what's called a walking problem. So if you're willing to walk a block, there's lots of parking available. The riverfront lot will be open for free parking. The Knights of Columbus will have available parking. There's parking on Macomb Street. The city lot is totally free there. So please, please come to the parade.
I did not know that. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. I think I'm prepared now.
Yeah.
So this is a little thing that I gave to every one of the people who worked for me and when we were in new customer acquisition and business development. It says a sale is a lagging indicator of success. And that made me think last night about grades and test scores are a lagging indicator of success sometimes. So there's a lot that goes into that. You gotta take time to nurture and grow. You know, some customers, they come on quickly and some take 2 to 3 years to come on. So, but I will say this, at some point, you do have to show a beneficial ROI, or in my case, the department would have been shut down. In our case, we can't shut down education, nor do we want to shut down education. But we do have to, I just want to encourage us to keep the ball. Mm-hmm. Now that we've hit the plateau, we want the ball to start rolling faster. And then secondly, because it came up with Mary talking about barriers that we don't think about, invisible barriers, I mentioned a group called Sleep in Heavenly Peace. We've built, to this point, the last 2 weekends, 150 beds. We still need, to my count, another 150 beds to be made to reach the goal of, I believe, 300 by Christmas is what she said. Mm-hmm. I would love to see us consider doing an MPS build, if we can make that happen this time before or whatever. There is also another nice component. It's a guy called Reaching for Revival. He has 2 books he places on each one of the beds, so there's a little literacy component as well, like a little reminder. So I throw that up as something that hopefully we can consider. If we can't do it before Christmas, if we can look into it next year with that organization. Okay.
Thanks, Brian.
And Sleep in Heavenly Peace is led by one of our Monroe Public Schools family members.
Yeah.
And her daughter.
Megan.
Yeah. And her daughter would like to play a role in that as well.
She's great.
Yeah.
I wanted to follow up from most of my notes are from yesterday's board meeting. I do have the list of follow-up that I'm still looking for and other stuff, but we'll get to that. I wanted to follow up on yesterday to make sure some of these points we don't forget. We were looking for data on the number of students teachers requested to be retained. That was part of a conversation yesterday on whether students were being retained, and if they were, how many parents had said no So I know that was one data point we were looking at. The other one was the survey on the number of the parents. I brought this up, how many of the parents went to Monroe Public School. I see that as like this community thing we just did, and it was like 900 and some people on it. So a lot of the kids said, hey, my parents went to Cantrick and, you know, whatnot. So I think it'd be interesting data to see how many parents in Monroe Public Schools actually graduated from Monroe Public Schools. It'd be a question. It would just be a question. Yeah. And then the other one is data on the cases of truancy. I know truancy and attendance and tardiness was a conversation yesterday, so we definitely want to follow up with the prosecutor's office on those with data points so that we know where we're at. The other one was the request to continue school data and grade proficiency review. When we went over that last night, it seems like we always run out of time when we're going over that, because we're looking at, you know, 12, 13 grades of school. And it's a lot of data to go over, and we did not really hit Monroe Middle or Monroe High School and drill down on that data and its correlation to graduation rates. So I am requesting that we include that in one of our work sessions or board meetings for review. Thank you.
Gary?
I've got nothing tonight.
Okay. Stacy?
I just want to say that I do like the name Cantrick. I just wish it had a modifier with it. And also going along with the bed building, I think there was two work sessions recently to make beds. And
yeah.
It was at Lowe's and at Prindley Court.
At Prindley Court.
But to go along with that, they also need bedding donations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And mattress pads.
Mattress pads and beds.
We've got a couple groups working on that, so yeah.
So today MASB emailed out the Delegate Assembly Handbook for 2025. In the handbook, it's going to have all the resolutions and bylaws that are for your review. It'll also have the newly proposed resolutions and bylaws, the ones that are proposed to be amended, the ones that are proposed to be deleted, removed, things like that. So Tom, Andy, Jamie, I've sent you an email with that as a PDF attachment. If you could send that to, no, it was like literally this evening. Oh. sorry. It wasn't like earlier today. It was literally, it may have been between meetings today. That is for you. And if you could send that to the rest of the board members. And then if any of you have questions, because the first 10 pages or so are basically like what the Delegate Assembly, the purpose and function is, how it will work. And then the next 30 pages are the resolutions and bylaws. And I would like to request if I could have like 5 or 10 minutes at our work session, at the work session in October, because the Delegate Assembly is October the 23rd. I would love to get all of your feedback, your questions, ideas, if we as a board want to take a resolution or amend a resolution, anything like that.
Okay. Thank you. Got a couple of things. First of all, to the board members, if you've noticed, we have had a resource officer here at our work session yesterday and tonight. I welcome feedback on how you feel about that. I think it. I think from a security perspective, with what's going on around the country, it makes sense. But again, if you have any particular comments or feelings on that, please let me know.
I did tell Michael we missed him. True statement.
In particular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other thing regarding homecoming. I would encourage people, if they want to see a quarterback that may make it into the pros a few years down the road, Lloyd Carr's grandson, number 2,
yes,
is the quarterback at Saline against Dexter. If you were at the Dexter game here in Monroe, Dexter kind of ran all over us. Saline, he threw over 400 yards against Dexter, so I'm sure he's probably already got an NIL deal. But
CJ's doing well in Notre Dame. I go out there and I thought
it. Yeah. Anyway, it would be your opportunity to see a very high caliber quarterback Friday night, unfortunately for Monroe. And that's all I've got. So next is the training.
So for our community members, I want to talk about the rest of the agenda. So in a moment, Jeremy's going to do a board training with our board members on my evaluation. And then we have two different closed sessions. And when we finish tonight, the board will come right out of closed session and adjourn. There's going to be no action taken. We're not going to turn back on the live stream or anything like that. So if you want to stay and be entertained around board training on how to evaluate the superintendent, you're more than welcome to stay around. We will keep the live stream going. But then once he's done training, then we're going to go into our first closed session. Come back out, go back into a closed session for my evaluation. But when it's all said and done, the board will just come out and adjourn the meeting, so there is no action being taken.
He's got to train Stacy, Gary, and Brian. That's going to start. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So.
Okay.
I didn't bring coffee. This is like, this is a huge document.
Should I do a little tap dance, Starla, to keep
I'm
everybody awake?
I'm telling you.
Jeremy,
it's like 15
but
pages
I'm not yet.
Long, and they're very little.
Coffee. So to my cabinet,
do you drink coffee this late? My brother does, but if I drink it this late, I can't sleep. Yeah.
We're still on recording.
My brother's a teacher, and he drinks coffee no matter what time of day it is, and he's fine.
Yeah. FYI.
Dave, will this let me plug in right here with the USB-C?
Okay, just so everybody.
Just hit that. Yep.
This one right here?
In
yep.
here?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, Duncan, I got it. So. No, if I drink it after like 4, I won't sleep. So.
That's about my cutoff.
Yeah.
Now, I'll drink a latte in the evening because it's not...
Just like tea and milk?
No, or? Mocha latte.
Oh, like with coffee in it, though. Like, yeah, that much caffeine is just too much for me, so...
Yeah, I can do that, but I can't do straight-up coffee.
So tell me how to...
sit down.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Yeah.
So I hit allow on my end when I plugged in. I don't know if that's what
just
I need.
Tell me there's no source, yeah. But...
Okay.
Let me start
I'll
over.
Let you poke at this if you need to, because I'm not
I
the
think
tech expert.
Things were pretty benign, and we weren't getting a lot of people showing up at the board meeting. So I think
there it is. Perfect.
We just
thank you, Dave.
Mm-hmm. No. I had like a major hot flash.
We just kind of let it go.
Hey, look, I have no jacket on. That tells you everything you need to know.
So we would just turn
okay. Let's. Is everybody still here? Yeah.
If you want to turn it off.
The three I need to talk to are here anyhow. So.
Yeah. the three newbies.
So.
Just sit on.
Did we do this?
Yes.
Yeah, we did this.
It's a statutory requirement. Otherwise, I would just say, Tom, tell them what they need to know. But everybody's legally, it's in the revised school code. Everybody has to be trained. On the use of the tool. So, but I'm going to move quickly because you've had a long meeting and I know we got more to do yet. So before I start, I will just quick, if I can ask the favor, if you do organize an MPS build, please invite me. I love building stuff and that sounds like a great program. I'm not familiar with it, but that's my hobby is woodworking. And so,
do you like the power sand? Do you like the drill?
I usually use hand tools, honestly. I'm kind of archaic, but I can use power tools.
Just
so, I mean, if we're banging
job,
stuff
I
out, so, yeah.
Power sanding is a
staple.
So, true story, I will not digress and waste your time, but before I went to law school, I worked for a year in a cabinet making shop, and that was the first job they give you when you go to the cabinet making shop is running the air sander. Mm-hmm. That's brutal to do for 10 hours a day. So, yeah, so.
Oh, your hand is
hurting. You got to have a power respirator or else your lungs will be full of the stuff. So,
I would love for us to do a habitat build one time. Mm-hmm.
So, but if you organize a build like that, please invite your old lawyer. So,
I did it once and I loved it.
Okay, I will move quickly here. Darla indicated I might put her to sleep, and I don't want to do that. And I know, taken in the spirit intended. But I don't want to waste your time. So the law does require that anybody who participates in the evaluation of a staff member who must be evaluated, superintendent on that list, must be trained on the tool that they are using to do the evaluation. So that's what I'm going to do briefly tonight. If we went through all of the history, everything, all of the slides that are contained in the packet, in the slide deck that's in front of you tonight, hopefully you've had a chance to look at it. If not, it's available for your reference. I am not going to read all of the slides. There's a lot of slides that are in there that cover the history, the structure, the background, the bibliography, as it were, the research base that supports why it looks the way that it does. If you have questions about that, fire them away at me. I'm very happy to answer them. But most boards, most of the time, say, please get on with it and get to the how to use it. And so that's what I'm going to do tonight, unless there's anybody that would like to ask any particular questions about background, et cetera.
So what I'd like to highlight, two particular pieces. One, the newest requirements of the law, because even for those that have been through this training before, within the last 17 months, there have been some significant changes to the structure of the evaluations law. And I gave you a brief update last year before we did the evaluation, kind of hit the highlights. I'll touch on those again today, and then just talk about how to use the tool so that when you go into your closed session, you can use the tool. So first thing to keep in mind is evaluations are not something that I or any other lawyer just thinks is a good idea. You are doing statutory compliance. So the law does require that you execute this at least once per year, with a few specific exemptions to that rule, for anybody who is required to be evaluated. Most people in your system who perform an educational role, teachers and principals, as well as a lot of other administrators, must be evaluated, and other people have to do those evaluations. The superintendent reports directly to the board, and so the board has to do the superintendent's evaluation. There is nobody else to do the board, the superintendent's evaluation. So the law allows you to move to an every other year model of evaluation. Andy has not asked for that. Most boards don't do it. Most superintendents don't ask for it, honestly. What I see a lot of times is teachers will request to move on to an every other year model, which they're also allowed to do if they have three highly effective or effective in a row, the highest available rating in a row. But most superintendents, just as a matter of kind of staying in touch with their boards, just do it every year anyway. And that's been the pattern here as well. So, but I like to point out the statutory structure, since that's my job. The big change in the most recent evaluation cycle, so for those that were here the last time you did the evaluation, it was brand new at that time. It had just taken effect. So we're a little bit more than a year out from the change in the law now, is that we no longer have four evaluation categories. So for 13 years, the state had four evaluation categories: highly effective, effective, minimally effective, and ineffective. As of just over a year ago now, about a year and a half ago, we have three. The state no longer accepts the rating of highly effective. So that doesn't mean there's no such thing as better than basic competence. That doesn't mean that the research supports all of a sudden lopping off 25% of the available options for you to utilize. It does not. In fact, most of the research by people that study this suggests that it is useful to have a category beyond baseline competence, that you have effective and then you have something above that. But the state is no longer accepting ratings above effective, and that's the biggest structural change that's hit us recently. So that begs the question, what do you do if the research going back decades and across the country does in fact support that there's value in having some category above baseline competence? If the state's not accepting that rating, what do you do? Do you just recalibrate the whole test? Nobody did that. Your teacher tools didn't do that. Principal tools didn't do that. This tool didn't do that. What we've done is leave all four categories available to you in the tool. So if there's a particular portion of the evaluation that you believe your superintendent is doing better than baseline competence, which is effectiveness, you can feel free to assign that rating within the tool. You can feel free to give that feedback when you're talking to your superintendent, but it's going to be scored as effective. So whether you assign the top category or the second top category, effective, they get the same score when they go to the state. To get technical about that, the way that this is reported to the state once a year is on the rep report. It's a big data package. Used to only be once a year. Now we send little pieces of data once a month as well, but most of it still goes out in June every year, including the evaluation ratings for all of your staff. And on that rating, you can assign a 1, a 2, or a 3. You used to be able to assign the 4. Now the state doesn't accept the 4. So whether you assign the top category or effective, or one of the bottom two categories, it's only gonna go up to a 1, 2, 3, 3. You're gonna, 3 is the top score you can get when it goes to the state. Okay, next big change that was made to the law, and again, we're in the second year now. Last year, this time, it was brand new, was the requirement for a mid-year progress report. This is not a mid-year full evaluation. What the law says is there must be a consultation between the evaluating party, that's you in this case, the evaluated party, superintendent in this case, to touch base on goals and progress towards goals and what you're gonna do the rest of the school year. That's what's required. And so you can, if you want to, go through all of the domains. Most school boards do not choose to do that. There's a one-page document that's included that says, from the superintendent to the board, here's what I'm working on goals, and the board can give feedback on those. That's statutorily compliant. That covers your basis for checking the box. If you want to do more, you may, but that's the minimum that's required. That's not what we're doing tonight. Tonight's the actual evaluation conversation. The next big change to the law, we're still in the category of kind of highlights of things that are brand new, or within the last year brand new. Superintendents, as well as all of your other staff members in various circumstances, can be allowed to appeal their evaluation rating. For everybody else in your system, the revised school code now spells out in quite explicit detail what exactly the parameters are and the circumstances and how you do an appeal, who it goes to, what the steps are, etc. Very detailed for teachers, very detailed for principals. When it comes to the requirement for the superintendent, it says the board must make a means of appeal available. That's it. Must make a means of appeal available. So nobody knows what the best practice is yet. It has not been litigated. I don't want any of my clients to be the ones who pay for litigation to figure that out. What we're suggesting is the next time you have to talk to your superintendent about contract language, talk to each other about a model that might work. Does that mean you talk to a mediator? Does that mean that you talk to the board again and just talk it out for an extra go-around? Does it mean you talk to the ISD? There's lots of different ways of modeling what an appeal for a superintendent might look like. The statute does not specify or require any of them. It just says you have to, if he ever says, hey, I appeal, you have to give him some means of appeal. So we suggest looking that through the contract process until such time as the state might give us a standard model. They have not done so at this point. Next big change is, and again, we're in the second year of this now, but for 13 years, student growth was either 25 or 40% of the superintendent's evaluation. It is now 20%. That is a statutory number. We can't modify that. Okay. I'm going to move very quickly through this part. The basic idea, I'm going to paraphrase and not insult your intelligence by reading all these slides. They're available if you want to check them. The basic idea, when the state adopted a requirement that you evaluate your superintendent, was that there should be some opportunity for the board and the superintendent to review progress on your strategic plan. That's if you go back and look at the floor debates and when they were passing this, how this came to be. They said there should be some public mechanism on some semi-regular basis of talking about progress towards your strategic goals as a school district. And when the law was passed, they said you can pick one of these off-the-shelf tools. They were the only tools available at the time. This was back in 2010. They were, neither of them were very good tools for evaluating a superintendent, because what they had done, essentially done, is taken teacher tools and relabeled them and said superintendent on it, and they were just clunky, and nobody uses them anymore. But they said you can develop a tool or modify one of those tools. There's been, since that time, multiple tools have been developed at the local basis. The tool you're using today was developed, it was paid for, the development of it was paid for by the Macomb County ISD. That's where it came from. And so when it was first developed, they called it the Macomb tool. Now, I don't know if anybody still calls it Macomb anymore, but that's where it came from. It took 2 years to build, and what we learned in the process of doing this is that Michigan was, believe it or not, the last state in the country to require superintendent evaluations. Everybody else has been doing this for a long time, which we didn't know at the time. We always think of Michigan as an education leader, but everybody else has been doing this for a long time. The silver lining to that was that we could crib from everybody else's notes. In some states, like Arizona, Maine, Minnesota, they have longitudinal data sets going back decades, so you can really validate your data and say, this is a valid rubric, you know, this idea, so we can borrow those and say, we're gonna use those too. So that's how this came to be and what it looks like. The last piece that I have to touch on before we go through, like, slide by slide, here's how to use it, and then we'll wrap up. The last piece that I need to touch on, because it's a new requirement for most of you, except those that were here just last year, is the requirement to include, quote unquote, rater reliability training. The state, when they passed this law, I think, was not thinking about boards and superintendents. This is part of the section of the revised school code that talks about evaluations of, quote unquote, administrators. I think they were thinking about principals, because if you think about, you have multiple elementary buildings in your school district. If everybody watched the same videotaped sample lesson of a teacher teaching in front of a classroom, you would want all of your principals to come up with roughly the same evaluation. You wouldn't want to have one who thought that was really bad performance, one who thought it was awesome, because then you'd have an easy building, a hard building, et cetera, and that can impact people's jobs. So you want to have some consistency, reliability. Makes a lot of sense in that context. It still applies to you evaluating the superintendent, even though there's only one board and one superintendent, so it makes a little bit less sense. The other thing that we as a firm tend to believe is that your elected officials, we don't want to go very far in trying to calibrate you to each other, like saying you have to be consistent. There's a certain amount of autonomy and independence of opinion that comes with being elected officials. So what we've done to satisfy this requirement is with each slide that we're going to go through, we've added a slide that says if everybody can agree, one of these lines describing superintendent performance is in the top two categories, kind of above the line, the other one's in the bottom two categories, that's calibrated enough. We think you've been calibrated to be satisfactory for the statute, and we're not going to try to push it farther than that in terms of getting people into alignment. We really think they were thinking about principles, but it does apply, so we have to have something in paper that says we are complying with that part of the statute. So when we get to a reliability slide, that's what that's all about. Any questions so far? I'm going to skip development process. The one thing I like to highlight, even when skipping all of the development process, excuse me, is one of the big clues we took when we did that 2 years of developing this and noticing that 49 states have been doing this for quite a while, some for a very long time, is that every other state, every single state that has a state tool. So if you go to Arizona, for example, there's an Arizona tool. Everybody uses that tool. It's paid for by the state. Michigan started to do this. There was a commission convened. It was called the Ball Commission. And they recommended essentially what this tool looks like. They said it should be simple, easy to use, collaborative, and it should have meaningful feedback. Like, you shouldn't just be a number. Like, I'm a 3.6. You should be able to have a conversation with each other about what do we need to focus on, what do we need to grow in, et cetera, et cetera. That was what the commission, and then like so much in Michigan, ran out of money, never went anywhere else. But all of the other states that have a state tool, they're all based on what used to be called the ISLIC standards. That's what's on the screen in front of you now. So those that have been around education for a long time, these were rebranded to the Professional Standards for Educational Leaders. That's the technical title today since 2015, I think. But for decades, these have been called the ISLIC standards. And what these are, what they represent, is the national level organizations for school leaders, superintendents, secondary principals, elementary principals, a couple other organizations. Every few years they have conferences and get together and say, do these big 10 ideas still represent what it means to be a school leader? And for about 35 years they've said yes, they haven't changed them. These have been consistent, which is beneficial for us to say, you can look back over time and say we're consistently measuring the same thing. So when we built this tool, we said we're going to base it on the same 10 ideas, these 10 ideas on the page in front of you right now. And so I like to highlight that even when we're skipping through most of the development. Okay, I'm going to skip the instructions as well. The instructions are don't surprise each other. So if you have, I'm paraphrasing, but I feel like I can do that with this board. The details are there if you want to read them all. The keys, though, as we see it, to having a good evaluation process is that you talk to each other as board members and you talk to the superintendent as well in a way that's oriented towards growth. You want to make your district better, you want to move forward your district into the future, whatever that means in your particular place and time. Are we focused on money troubles at this point in time? Are we focused on new curriculum? Are we focused on building? Whatever the case might be. You can make that mean what it needs to at your point in time in your particular school district, but you really should be not just filling out a spreadsheet and saying, average, you know, I think you're a 3, I think you're a 4, you're a 1, and you come up with a 3.2. Well, what does that really mean? It's better than 3, I guess, but not as good as 4. But so we haven't done that. There's no spreadsheet. What you have to do on each of these domains is talk to each other. Talk to each other as board members, talk with the input of your superintendent, and focus on the actual ideas that you're talking about. How are we doing on this? How are we doing on that? And hopefully in that process, you will have, of course, complied with the statute. That is important that we comply with the law, but hopefully also have had a meaningful and productive conversation that will help you move the school forward. That's the structure here. So follow the no surprises rule. You know, if you want the superintendent to do something, give him more than a week to do it, things like that. This is not, quote unquote, a binder tool. We don't tell you you must produce these specific artifacts. If the superintendent ever wants to give you a piece of paper that looks like it's relevant to this, we encourage you to look at it. That's fine. He's welcome to provide evidence or information, but we don't require specific artifacts to do this. Any questions so far?
I know I'm moving fast, but I think I can get away with that with you guys. Look like you're up to speed. Okay, so what we're going to do, I will walk through on the first one, the structure, because they all look the same. The structure is the same on all of these. The content is obviously different on each of the six components. Structure is the same. So the only thing that you have to assign a rating to on each of these components is the overall component. All the other words that are on the page are there for your benefit, to guide the conversation. And as I'll explain in a little bit more detail in just a second, these are field-tested rubrics. So for example, we could point at 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, whatever they are, and say, this is something we can go in our bibliography and show you in Arizona, Maine, Minnesota, whatever it is. They've been using that question for 30 years, and we can validate. That is a meaningful way to talk about this aspect of leadership. It's a valid, validated concept. But you don't have to assign ratings. You don't have to put numbers, pluses, minuses, check marks, anything like that. All we're really talking about in each component is the component. So you'll see the title, one or two word sentence description that relates back to those 10 big ideas, those ISLIC standards. And then the performance indicators are, again, a rubric that will help break that down into a little bit smaller piece. If you don't feel like you want to spend a lot of time talking about one of them, that's okay. Like I said, you don't have to go through each one, put a check mark, a plus mark, anything like that. They're there to help guide the conversation. If you pencil in mentally 1.6 because you think that's the little aspect, the smaller piece that you need to talk about, that's also okay. This is just here to guide the conversation. The rest of the words on the page, the illustrative behaviors, we like to call them, those columns that you see, I usually suggest reading from the bottom up. This is if you've understand we're talking about leadership skills. That's the big category. And then you look at the 1.1 through 1. Whatever on the page and say, I think I have a pretty good handle of what I'm seeing. I understand. You've talked to each other. What's the right word to slap on that for the state? What's the rating that we need to put assigned to that? What you see on the right-hand side are clusters of behaviors that we usually observe together. Again, not me personally, but in the people that study this, the professional literature says, if you see one of these, you're probably going to see something similar on these other bullet points. So that's why I like to say read these from the bottom up. If you're having a hard time saying, how do I put a label on what I think I see, look at there. It will help you guide you to the correct label at that point in time. They all work the same way. You only have to score each component. So, with that said, let's talk about component one, visionary leadership. This is one of two leadership categories that are in the tool. Again, reflecting those 10 priorities, those 10 professional standards for educational leaders. The subtitle for this, I like to talk about subtitles. I think it helps people maybe if the initial caption doesn't grab your attention or grab your imagination, subtitle might do that. These are classic organizational leadership skills. Portable leadership skills. They're not necessarily tied to school stuff. When we get to educational instructional leadership in a couple domains, a couple slides ahead, that's where school-specific things are housed, where we talk about how you're doing on curriculum, et cetera, et cetera. This is, can you motivate people towards a goal? Classic organizational leadership skills. Can you, as the CEO, another way to think about it, can you, as the CEO, move people towards whatever the priorities are. Again, in our system of government in Michigan, the board sets the high-level priorities through your policies, your strategic plan, et cetera, et cetera. Can the superintendent motivate people towards moving in that direction? That's what you're measuring here, is those classic, portable leadership organizational skills, as opposed to specific content areas. We're going to get to that in a couple slides when it comes to school programs. Any questions on that one? Jamie, do you have water? I'm sorry, I'm just feeling a little dry.
Here.
No, she's always got me covered.
We all have one. They're always drinking their water.
I was going to say, Jamie usually stocks up for me, I know. Once I get to talking for more than about 10 minutes, I start getting a little bit dry. Thank you. Okay, as promised, this is as far as we're going to take it with calibration. The goal here is if everybody can agree one of these represents a positive type of behavior, top two categories, or a negative type of behavior, bottom two categories, we're not going to try to calibrate you any further than that. But we can tell the state, yes, you have been calibrated. So in the first example, the superintendent's actions, staffing, and resources have little connection to vision, lower two categories, versus the superintendent clearly communicates the district's vision to both others in both writing and speech, top two categories. Fair enough?
Concur.
Okay.
Is that what we're looking for, is a concur?
Thank you.
Yes.
Yep. So, okay, component number two, policy and governance. This one could be subtitled, again, I like the subtitles, could be subtitled the internal communication between the board and the superintendent, right? So to be effective, the superintendent has to know where you're at, know what your priorities are. Primarily, that relationship is, of course, focused through the board president. That's one of the key roles of the board president, is being kind of a conduit between the board. You, and I'm not going to get philosophical, but I mean, you as elected representatives in our system of government, in the Michigan Constitution, are to represent the interests and priorities of the local community and set targets, set goals, set policies, set standards. You know, that's what you're here for, is to represent the interests and priorities and concerns of the local community. Superintendent is the executive. He's got to get that done. And so the relationship between the rest of the organization, all the hundreds and hundreds of people that you employ, all the volunteers, the families that send their students here, all the students, et cetera, and the board who's elected to set those high-level priorities, it all focuses on the superintendent. So everything that has to do with the two-way communication back and forth between the superintendent and the board, obviously knowing policies is part of that, being familiar with education law to a reasonable extent, part of that. We highlight those here. But anything that has to do with that two-way flow of information between the board representing the community and the rest of the organization, it all goes through this conduit between the superintendent and the board. And so that's what's captured in component number two. Okay, calibration two. The superintendent is not engaged in work related to policies and does not enforce district policies. You're going to have a lower rating versus the superintendent appropriately and equitably enforces policies, top two categories, one of the upper ratings. Okay, I promised another instructional another leadership category, and here it is, the instructional leadership. This is where we review, talk about, evaluate specifically the matter of running a school. In the first category, how is he doing at running an organization, motivating people towards a goal? Here's where we're talking about the things that are particular to running a school. Are all of the other evaluations being done? That's not the only thing he has to worry about, obviously, but it's a big part in this category. Are everybody else's evaluations getting done? How's curriculum review doing, et cetera, et cetera? Does the board want to see program changes? You're in the middle of a big one now with a 5-6 building. How's that going? Anything having to do with running a school specifically, as opposed to just leading an organization, fits within this category, the instructional leadership category. Okay. Calibration number three. Professional development is infrequent and is not connected to student or staff performance data, be the lower two categories, versus the superintendent actively develops expertise about quality instruction and is able to recognize and describe high quality teaching. It's going to be top two categories.
Concur.
All right, component number four, communication and community relations. If number two I had subtitled as the internal communication between the board and the superintendent, this is the external communication. This is everybody else, the outward-facing aspect of the superintendent's job. So you're each a big face of the district and the community as an elected official. The superintendent is obviously a big face of the district and the community, whether that's in the building, in other buildings, at the football game, at Kiwanis, Chamber of Commerce, et cetera, et cetera. And that's two-way communication again. That's boosting the district, promoting the district, putting the district out there. It's also listening to community concerns so that it can be fed back into the loop of getting it back to the board as well. So anything having to do with the external facing aspects of communications fits within number four here. So if the superintendent is ineffective in communication with staff, parents, and students, lower two categories, versus the superintendent keeps staff, students, and parents informed on a regular basis, top two categories. Okay, component five. 20 years ago when I was getting started in this particular field of law, if a superintendent was going to be evaluated at all, it wasn't a requirement at the time, this is what it would be about. How's the budget? How's the audit? You know, how are you on the five-year evaluation of the roof cycle, right? You know, every 85% of Michigan school buildings still have flat membrane roofs. That's just a, you know, and so you've got to have flat membrane roofs, rubber roofs, you know, versus sloped roofs, metal roofs, anything else. 80%+ still have them. So if you have every flat membrane roof, you got to have a five-year cycle to check it for leaks, patch it, replace it, et cetera, things like that. I was giving this presentation a few years ago. Board president looked at me, put his hand up, and he said, is this where I put the salt? And I immediately thought food, salt shaker. Everybody else in the room knew exactly what he meant. In that particular district, I don't think it's this way in this district because you're big enough, you have operations. It was a smaller district. The superintendent's job included ordering road salt for the parking lots in the winter. And that winter, the superintendent hadn't ordered enough, and the board president got angry phone calls all winter from people who were slipping in the parking lots. I said, yeah, this is where you put the salt. The salt goes in this category. All the stuff of the district, the budget, the finances, the audit, anything that has to do with managing the things that it takes to make the district run fits within component number 5. So management of the operations of the district is poor or non-existent, lower two categories, versus superintendent establishes a clear set of operating procedures for effective operation, top two categories. And then finally, professionalism and ethics. This is one of those 10 components, a required element of an evaluation. This is not just a negative category. I can't tell you, and your board president hasn't said this to me, so don't. This is not about Tom. Other board presidents have said to me more than once, we just keep this one in our pocket in case we have a problem, right? It's there for a rainy day. You know, we'll use it if we have to. And I like to point out, this can be positive too. If you think your superintendent is setting a good example for his staff, if he's modeling ethical behavior, you know, if he's honest, feel free to make note of this. This does not just have to be stick it in your pocket and use it for when you decide you've got an ethics problem. It's there, obviously. You know, if you ever run into that, it's there for that. But this is not a throwaway that you just use for a rainy day. You can feel free to reflect positive attributes of professionalism in this category as well. So I just like to point that out because it's a comment I get fairly frequently. So calibration number 6, the superintendent has demonstrated inconsistent or unethical behavior, does not stand by his word, lower two ratings, versus the superintendent treats students and staff fairly and shows respect at all times, top two categories. Okay, how do we put it together? So I still live in the world of pencil and paper. This is fillable. You can put it in almost any one of the software platforms that's out there for making it work when we provide it to you. But I still talk about circling things. So we've put, hopefully at the bottom of each page, you've circled, so to speak, or checked a box, whatever it is, circled the rating for each one of those components. Quick note on that, as we're going through the evaluation in closed session later tonight, whether it's the board president or the board secretary who is going to do it, either way, one person needs to keep the copy, which is the one that you vote on at the end. I know you're not voting tonight, but when you come back, somebody's got to have the official, because I'm not keeping your official copy. Somebody's got to have the copy that says, we overall assigned him the rating of whatever. Parliamentarian, whoever, it's not assigned by law. What the law requires is that the board take action. So you do have to vote. I know it's on the next agenda, not on tonight's. You have to take action, so a vote, to assign one of the ratings. It's got to be a vote to assign one of those three ratings. And so that's why I say somebody needs to keep a copy that at the bottom says, this is the rating we want to vote on. Because otherwise, it's going to be unsupported when somebody makes a motion if you don't have that piece of paper left behind. So somebody okay. Keep an official copy. Everybody's got their own to work on for your own notes. I understand that, perfectly fair. But one of those needs to be kind of put a star on and like, this is the record that we're keeping for voting. Yeah, yeah.
That's the official.
And giving it to Jamie to put in the minutes would be perfect. Yeah, so.
The back page of evaluation tool is the final evaluation rating.
So everybody's got a copy. You can write your own notes on, work on, help guide the conversation. That's all good. But there does need to be an official record for when you make your vote. It's not an unsupported vote. It's got a record, a document attached to it. That's my point with that one. And so if nobody else wants to fill out these last two pages, that's okay. But one person needs to be filling out these last two pages to put these together. So hopefully on each copy of each slide, you've been circling at the bottom, effective or whatever the rating is at the bottom of that. Here's where you can put it all in one place. Pull them all forward, put them on one page. What do they all look like together? What I can tell you after having sat, and I counted it up the other day at the request of Chip Valley Soup, asked me how many I'd done. So I went back and looked. I've sat in on, and we don't require that you have me sit in, but a lot of boards ask us to sit in. I've sat in on just over 1,100 evaluations in the last 13 years, which is a lot. And out of those 1,100 plus evaluations that I've observed, I've never seen a superintendent that the board has said they're 50% top category and 50% bottom category. You see a cluster, like you always see them land mostly, as you would expect, because we're people, right? So you're probably going to see it land around one of these categories, maybe three, four, five, and one, maybe one or two off to the side and the other. Again, the rule is, if you go back to that instructions page, talk to each other. We're going to recommend if you got four or five, absolutely, if you've got six that are all in the same column, that's probably where you want to land on the overall for the tool. But talk to each other. If there's one that's a little higher, one that's a little lower, if somebody wants to argue for no, it should be dragged down, no, it should be pushed higher, have the conversation, but you achieve that by consensus again. Yeah. It's probably going to be where four or five of them land together. Let's say, for the sake of a hypothetical tonight, to make my math easy, on the last page, you land on effective. So I'm going to circle effective with my pencil in the air here. So that's the tool. That's going to become 80% of the final rating that you assign. We still have to put in the 20% for student growth data. That's statutory. Can't do anything about it. The point of this slide is whatever the aggregate data of your teachers is. So we have data on every teacher that's evaluated. What's their student growth, teacher by teacher? Whatever the aggregate is for the district, superintendent matches. That's the point of this slide. So you don't have to do any extra math, something like that. He's responsible for all the data in the district. Whatever the aggregate is for the teachers, if you have a good year, a bad year, an exemplary year, whatever the case might be, the superintendent's going to match for his 20% of what the teacher's aggregate is. That's the point of this slide. So if the teachers are effective, he's effective. Yeah, Tom.
So we're going to get, basically, is Andy going to give us the teacher rating?
So you use whatever the most recent school data is. It's usually calculated towards the end of the school year. Yeah.
What you put in your
yeah. Yep.
Okay.
This is what was on your self-evaluation.
Yeah.
Last, last June, we had to.
I was going to say, it's usually done at the end of every school year.
That was where we got the data, was from what you sent to us.
And self-evaluation.
Yes.
It's on the self-evaluation.
But this category that we're talking about, student growth and assessment rating for teachers,
yep.
is the what we're discussing right now, and that has nothing to do with the chart of the thing.
So I don't know what chart has been provided or not, but let me.
They're referencing a Andy's goals and his own stuff.
Separate.
Yes.
So, sorry, go ahead.
They're thinking they're one and the same.
So every year in June, usually June, part of that rep report, every district in the state has to add up and then average all of the student growth data for all their teachers, and it gets sent to the state. Mm-hmm. That number, and every year, the student growth data is either going to be effective, developing, or needing support when it goes to the state. Like, those are the categories the state gives us. So somebody, well, probably multiple somebodies in your district, usually curriculum people, are reviewing all of the teachers' evaluations, what does the student growth data show for all of them, and then it gets averaged, and then the overall for the district goes to the state once a year. Whatever the most recent yearly report that went to the state is the one you have to use for the superintendent.
And that has nothing to do with us.
No, you don't calculate
that's what
that.
I
it just
to make clear
nope.
for everybody. That's
we're not doing not, math. We're not doing math tonight. So.
Yeah, that's why they were all thinking it was part of this other stuff, and I'm like, no.
No, that's it's reported out every June, and whatever the most recent June is, because you can do this either in June or September or December. Boards do it throughout the year. Whatever the most recent one that went to the state is the one that you have to use for your superintendent evaluation. So.
And Andy's goals that he presented. Are part of the totality of the tool. So they may not hit just one category.
Sure.
They're probably going to hit all six categories in some way
sure.
or another.
Perfectly
so
fair.
So those are, and then your responses to those play in there. And that is your self-evaluation then of what you've evaluated yourself
yep.
on.
So
those are all another data point. I just want to make sure we're clear on that. Those
so all of that fits in the 80%, which is thankfully, I would say, the predominant part. What your conversation is on, about the tool, and that's all 80%. The student growth data by law is 20%, not 21, not 19. It's 20%, and it's whatever the most recent package that went to the state was, that's what it is. And so hypothetically, let's say you're effective. I don't know what it was this year, but let's say effective. So circle, it makes my math easier on the last page. Let's say it was effective as well. So he matches that number. Whatever the number was, he gets it. That's the point of this slide.
This chart that
I'm sorry, I don't know which one that is.
It's part of his goal setting.
Okay.
And it was the 5% category and where he hit each of those categories. That is something that is going to be utilized as we go through the tool. Is that fair enough to say it that way?
Yeah, we go to closed session. I'm going to talk about that.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. Okay. So, again, I'm not commenting on specific numbers. This is the training on how to do the tool. And what the point on this one is just this is how we get the 20%. The 20% is whatever the last report to the state was becomes 20% of this evaluation. So then how do we put it together to make it 80-20? Because that's what the law requires. 80% is from the tool. 20% is the student growth data. Again, trying to make it simple, putting it on the same page. We just said, let's say hypothetically you had five effectives and one somewhere else. So you're going to land on effective most likely overall. And then Lee said that our student growth data, to make my math easy, was effective. So we show them on the same page, effective and effective. And here's where you can see what I made reference to at the very, very beginning, how even though we've given you four categories to use because that's what the research suggests is valid, we can only send 1, 2, 3 to the state, not 1, 2, 3, 4. So the top two categories both are reported out with a 3 because the state doesn't take a 4 any longer. So that's what we see here.
Didn't we discuss last year that because there's only 3, the board could choose to use the only 3 and just combine the top 2 into, and if you're choosing a 3, it's a 3.
So you're going to get a 3 either way.
I remember us talking about that last year. And, you know, because, and then when we graded it, we were like, okay, what was really the reason for that? It really didn't provide a whole lot of value.
If you're thinking back and hard, really hard back and forth between the top two categories, don't take too long on it because the state's going to get a 3 anyway. The real value of leaving the 4 is just in honor of all of the research that does. We didn't just make this up. Like, there's real research that supports this idea that it's useful to tell your employees less than competent, really less than competent, competent, and then a category beyond baseline competence, that it's a valuable employment model. So we've left it in there, as have your teacher tools, your principal's tools. Everybody left it in. Yes. So it's there because we think if you really want to highlight, do more of this, it's a valuable thing to have that in there. But if you're stuck going between the top two, move on. It's going to the state as a 3 either way. It doesn't.
Point. It's going 100%. As a 3 regardless.
100%.
And we're doing this for that reason.
Yep. So you don't have to take a long time on that.
Right.
So putting it all together, we've given you a place to write the word and the number. Again, trying to make this as user-friendly as we go through page by page as possible. So write the word for the tool. We said effective. That's a 3 times 8, 24. Same thing, student growth assessment. We said in my hypothetical was effective. 3 times 2, 6, you're at 30, and you're right on the effective band, the top end, which is what you would expect based on what we had talked about in my hypotheticals, if you were going through that. The bottom line, where you circle effective overall, whatever it is overall, that's what you have to have a motion and a vote on at your next meeting. If you don't do that, you haven't fulfilled the requirements of the statute. So you got to vote on one of those 3 at the bottom. The rest of it is just to get to that point in a hopefully not only valid way, but hopefully a meaningful way that you've had a good conversation as you've gone through it. So that's the training. I could check the box. You're all certified now. Everybody's legal, and I will step away from the podium. So thank you all for your attention.
Thank you.
So any other questions we have, we'll do in closed session.
If they're about specifics of Andy's evaluation, yes. Yeah. If it's about the structure of how this works, then you can ask it now. I'm happy to answer.
Yeah, because when it's closed session, you know, we always went with the tenant, it's closed session, and any information we share out of closed session would be the board agreed that this is the information we're going to give Danny. And I remember that not being the case last time, so I wanted to know, how do we proceed on information that's coming out of that session?
So
I want to make sure it's clearly indicated, because I don't think he really got a clear picture last time
I want to be very precise about the way I answer that. So the contents of deliberation and discussion in closed session may not be released. They cannot be released.
Right.
What can be, and what I think I suggested last time, if you wanted to have comments, because we provide comments on each section, is that individual board members' comments on your own worksheet as you're working aren't the evaluation. Those don't go out the door. So if there's a comment, please focus more on third grade reading. Pick a topic, whatever it is. Right? If there's a comment that the whole board wants to be released, the board needs to take the time to say, do we want this specific comment, not a a simulacrum of it, but like this specific comment, do we want that on the copy that Andy gets? If you do put that on there, that's not deliberation. You're not violating the Open Meetings Act with that if you put a comment. The point I was trying to make, though, is if you've written notes, which I encourage you to do to get ready for tonight, on your comment section on the pages, those don't automatically come out the door. It's only what the only what the whole board decides. Yeah. This specific comment.
Right.
Please focus on third grade reading,
and
just
no
as an illustration.
And no other information can be shared outside of closed session.
No, nothing else outside of closed session. That's the Open Meetings Act.
You.
Yep. Yep.
I will be coming in again.
Okay.
So.
Which past years I've not done that. So this year I will come in.
I think it would probably be helpful. Yeah. Yes. I think that would have been helpful last year.
I didn't mean to cut you off too early, Darla. I'm sorry. Any other questions on the structure about doing it? Okay.
All right, so we're going to, when the other two come back.
Yeah, I need a couple of minutes here.
All right. If anybody else. Recess.
Then we'll come back in too.
Yes.
Okay. Get a motion to go into closed session.
Motion to go into closed session.
Do we have support?
Support.
Jamie, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Jenkins.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Sabadini.
Yes.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Yes.
Mrs. Vincent.
Yes.
Mr. Heck.
Yes. When the door is closed, we will be in a closed session.
Turn off
your mics.
Well.